Greetings, detectives. There has been a change in the wind, a development, if you will. 1 year ago, Sherlocked CC disappeared, buried, done. But now, it has mysteriously reappeared. This year, you have a mystery to solve. And in order to do that, you're going to have to put on your Deerstalker and grab your magnifying glass and an extra cell phone charger. You're going to need one of those because you are going on a hunt, a scavenger hunt. The Baker Street Babes have discovered a long-lost Sherlock Holmes mystery. But to piece it together, you need to run around Comic-Con collecting clues and taking jump picks and finding the very best Doctor Strange and Iron Man cosplayers. Each task completed will give you more points and the mystery will be further revealed. Get the most points, and let's just say you will be handsomely rewarded with a lot of very cool prizes. But don't wait. Join the hunt and prepare yourself. The game, my fellow nerds, is on.
Find out more at www.sherlockedcc.com.
They call us the irregulars, but baby, we're always on time. Baker Street babes always leave the rest of them behind. So in Scotland Yard they send you home, you feel like you're losing your This quotidian world has got you crying. Won't you two one be mine?
Amy, if you want to go ahead and introduce yourself.
Sure. My name is Amy. I podcast with the Baker Street Babes. I do reviewing, some original writing, and also a lot of social media for the Babes. And also, I write books about Irene Adler and Sherlock Holmes.
My name's Chris Sorden. I basically ran across Sherlock Holmes about 30 years ago, and basically has been my constant companion since then. So I read everything I can about Sherlock Holmes. So I'm here to, at least in part, fanboy over Amy's work. So we'll go with that. And I guess starting at the beginning is a scandal in Bohemia, right? Yes. We have this, 15 or 20 page short story. Mm-hmm. And it's... You know, I think, are we all familiar with the story? I presume. I'm seeing a lot of nodding heads. Good. So, at the time, you know, not to really cause a lot of controversy, she's a throwaway character, like all of them are. He's writing these stories for money, right? That's it. She shows up in 20 pages of the canon and now has a huge shadow cast over Sherlock Holmes, because it wasn't written to be literature, it was just written, and now it's literature. So here's this woman who, we counted, appears once and is mentioned four other times.
Yes, she's, I have a list, obviously Scandal in Bohemia, and then if you squint a lot, you can find her in A Case of Identity, The Blue Carbuncle, The Five Orange Pips, and His Last Bow. Again, those last couple are some heavy squinting to get there. But we want that because, like you're saying, this character who really appears the one time and has her name mentioned one other time is this character that we want to find somewhere else because we're so compelled by her.
It's not a character you see in adaptation that is skipped over, right? I mean, Moriarty maybe makes it as well, but after those two, I mean, we don't always get the same inspectors. We don't always get a lot of people, except for Short, Holmes, and Watson, but a lot of time we get Irene and Mycroft. That's mm-hmm. kind of, Mycroft, she's yeah. in that small handful of characters mm-hmm. who generally try and show up. I mean.
It's true, and yeah. I think, like Mycroft, there's a lot of people always asking the question of, what is it about these particular characters out of, like you're saying, characters that Doyle is writing as kind of, oh, I've dashed off a story. These characters somehow rise above a lot of other, not that those aren't great characters too, but in the consciousness, they rise above the others. And we want to continue to learn about them and write about them. For sure.
Well, you've answered your own question, right? That is that, you know, what she's fully formed. It's, again, short story, but we have a fully formed character, mm-hmm. right? We have this person who, you know, we know Irene Adler probably better than we know Lestrade, I would argue, and Lestrade shows up in close to half the stories.
Right. Right. It's like he's like a functional character a lot of the time. Yeah. We need him. It's like Doyle's going, here's a name I've used for this. He's the cop. Irene appears this one notable time, and in such a short time, Doyle uses this writing genius with so much brevity to give us so much punch for the character. We get a lot of bang for a very short amount of buck in her case.
Before we kind of tiptoe off into how she shows up in, I guess, the later works or things like that, does anybody have any kind of particular thought or feeling about Irene Adler, Scandal in Bohemia? Here's this person on the printed page.
Good for her.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I just always wondered if perhaps the reason why Irene has always become such like a big thing, and why in so many different movies and depictions of her she's kind of placed opposite Sherlock, is because Watson, in writing the story, I mean, very clearly, right, the very first few paragraphs over him saying, like, Sherlock doesn't care about anybody, and he kind of was pissed off with this woman, but he doesn't care, and he's not in love, and it's not love, and he doesn't have that feeling. And so I feel like, at least in Scandal of Bohemia, the very first few paragraphs, I mean, he kind of points it out, whereas in a lot of these other stories, he never says, oh, this young woman came in, and very clearly Sherlock doesn't care. Whereas he points it out in the story more than he would have in another one.
That's a really good point. It's almost like you get a reverse psychology effect, and it's almost like Holmes cares more about her than she does about him. And I'll segue into, we had emailed back and forth because I didn't know if I was going to be able to be on this panel. And basically, there's a lot of canonical characters that exist so that Sherlock Holmes can beat them, right? Like, they are kind of, here's the villain of the week, and Sherlock Holmes is going to win. And arguably, Irene Adler is not one of these. She is going about her life, trying to achieve her own objectives of being with the man that she loves. And Sherlock Holmes is actually the obstacle getting in her way. And she doesn't lose to him, but nor does she seem to feel any kind of need that she has to win, because Sherlock Holmes is just not that important to her as anything other than an obstacle to her future life and happiness at that point. And I think that's why she's so fascinating, because she's this character who is the protagonist of her own story that's happening parallel to Holmes. It's not only happening intersecting with Holmes. She's this woman with this whole life that is happening, and she's just kind of like batting him away a little bit like a fly, like, okay, well, I'll win against you so I can get what I want and maybe have a little fun in the process.
Which is why I'm glad she's here, because I read that in the email. I'm just like, yeah, I mean, you see this in canon. There are characters who, and we were talking about this just right before panel, who engage Holmes. They're the criminal. They're the antagonist, and they engage Holmes to kind of say, like, look, you know, it wasn't me, because this dude says it's not me, right? The retired colorman is probably the archetype of this, where this dude has killed his wife and her lover, mm-hmm. and then says, but it can't be me because I've hired Sherlock Holmes, and, you know, cleverly beating him. And, you know, how do you define winning, right? Most people, I want to beat Sherlock Holmes. Irene wants to get married to Godfrey Norton and just, you know, get the king out of her hair. Sherlock Holmes has got nothing to do with it, mm-hmm. except for speed bump. So.
Right. And it's one of the cases, there are several in the canon where there's not exactly a true crime committed, and it's also kind of in an inverted story, because obviously the person coming to Holmes is the king, who is kind of, if there's a true villain, he's kind of it. He's the unsympathetic character. So it's a backwards story. And obviously by the end, we've had that upside down thing become right side up with Sherlock Holmes saying, yeah, she isn't in your class because she's like way above you.
Yeah, that's a great line. To my estimation, she's at somewhat higher station than Your Majesty. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a very, very, you know, you want to talk about throwing shade, old school, there it is, right there. That is like literally, yes, you're royalty, and so. No, that's Irene. The interesting thing, and I belong to a group called the Adventuresses of Sherlock Holmes. This group was started in the late 60s, because in the late 60s, the BSI was stag, and a bunch of college women basically said, we can do this on our own, and they did. They started allowing men to join probably in the late 80s. That one's gonna wrap my knuckles that I don't remember this, but they chose their name based on this character, mm-hmm. the Adventuresses of Sherlock Holmes, right? And I don't know, to us being an opera singer, and you know, the shocking part of her conventionally at the time was that she was basically a single woman traveling the world. You know, it was okay if she's what the prima, mm-hmm. Yeah, that too, but yeah, she had the Warsaw Opera, right? You know, she's an artist and not completely socially acceptable. I mean, being a performer at this time, it's mm-hmm. the arts were appreciated, but it, you know, there was always a little, we'll go see an opera, but we're not inviting the cast home for dinner, right, kind of thing. Right. For the people who would actually be able to afford mm-hmm. to do that kind of thing, where I would go, you know, to an opera. So you're not going to go to Buckingham Palace kind of thing for dinner with the Queen. But yeah, so she's this American woman in Europe, kind of floating about, you know, on her own, which was just scandalous at the time, mm-hmm. right? I mean, you think about it, and Victoria's the queen, but she still got a whole bunch of male handlers, mm-hmm. right? I mean, that's, I think the recent production on PBS does a really good job mm-hmm. of that, is that, you know, she's the queen, and she's old enough to have been crowned, but you've still got, you know, the Duke of Kensington trying to put the arm on her. You've got, you know, everybody else trying to put the arm on her, figuring, oh, yeah, she's just this 18-year-old girl. I got it, you know. Yeah. Sit down, honey. That's not what Irene was willing to do either.
Well, and it's, I mean, I think when the King of Bohemia approaches Holmes, it's almost like he's expecting Holmes to just take on face value. She's a woman who's independent. She's earning money. She's doing well for herself. Of course he's going to take my side, because this woman is obviously unrespectable, and anything that happened must be her, you know, she got her evil clutches into me. And I think that he underestimates Holmes's reasonable open-mindedness to see what he thinks about, what he deduces about character, regardless of what somebody else is bringing him. He's going to investigate her for himself and come up with a very different conclusion about this woman who is kind of doing her own rescuing. She's the one that's making it possible for her to be with Norton. He's not the one doing it. So Holmes kind of subverts the expectations of what someone coming to him thinks, I think, in this case.
Any speculations on why she and Godfrey Norton were rushing off to the chapel, or what she was doing often in men's clothes with the freedom?
I've got an idea about getting married, and it's because it ties in nicely, Amy, with your theory of, she figured out how to win. She realized that Holmes might be the agent for the king, but he's also the guy who's going to get the king off my back, but not by solving the king's problem. So she's mm-hmm. like, I got it. We got this solved. I'm going to go get married. You know, that's, I don't know about rushing off other yeah. than, like you said, having fun. I don't,
yeah,
you know, rushing around in men's clothes. But I think that's the wedding. I think it's like, you know what, I've got this, you know. We don't see Irene's thought process mm-hmm. in the story. And she played all of them. It was, this is, this, that was her Kaiser Soze moment, right? Right at the end of the film, he starts walking normally. And you're like, shit. That's her Kaiser Soze moment. I'm like, I got this wrapped up. We're going to the continent. Let's go, baby. We're done.
Yeah, it's like, I'm ready. Why would I wait? I've done everything I want to do, and baby, here's my arm candy, and we're going on our honeymoon now. I think there was another hand, but I want to say something because you brought up the men's clothes, which obviously is an amazing part of the story. We just have this, it seems like a throwaway, and then it's foreshadowed. It's like Chekhov's greeting, and then later we find out that it's actually Irene Adler, of course. I was reading the book Cocaine Blues by Carrie Greenwood, which is the first Franny Fisher novel, which I recommend all media Franny Fisher. And she says very early on when you're kind of meeting Franny, she says she's wearing men's clothing, and she describes it because those books are very much about fashion and fashion choices. And she says they made her inconspicuous, but she could make her femininity felt if she wished. And I felt like that was an excellent description also of Irene Adler. She's someone who can choose to become these other characters and be subsumed into them, but she can make her femininity and her personality known whenever she wants to. Did we have another hand?
We did, sir. Yeah.
Well, if I might express an opinion, I think there's Sherlock Holmes, the canon, and there's Sherlock Holmes, the mythos, which has grown from generation to generation. The increasing importance of Irene Adler is that reflects the fact that over the last century, women have had a lot more freedom to participate and play more important parts in society. And you see that reflected in the mythos in Irene Adler, but also in the more recent Sherlock show with Mary Watson. The fans of Sherlock want there to be a larger role for female characters.
That's interesting because we can now talk about Arthur Conan Doyle, because he was also something of a feminist. He was probably, you know, a very well-known male suffragette, for lack of a better word. He was very much in favor of divorce reform. Now, he did have a little bit of self-interest about that, and not being the king, he can't set up his own church. But he was, you know, under his own name, writing about these things, whether it was divorce, whether it was alcoholism, or things of that nature, because his father was an alcoholic. And, you know, so he saw firsthand what requiring families to be, you know, kept together in such abhorrent circumstances would do. So it's not surprising that he writes this character, or a number of the other, you know, very strong female characters that he's written. And we were talking, other than the one name that we came up with, he was never intentionally, what was the word I'm looking for? He was never intentionally, we were having the misogyny discussion. Is he really misogynistic or not? And the only woman he is purposefully dismissive or rude or whatever to is Isadora Klein in The Three Gables, and she did it to herself. She's in this really bad circumstance because she used somebody and basically was getting her comeuppance, and Holmes is like, you want me to stop you from getting your comeuppance, and you're being a real bitch about it. You know, so you're on your own. But, you know, even to women who he could have, because of social convention at the time, been openly dismissive and, you know, very misogynistic too, he wasn't. And, you know, it's...
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously the whole what I do, not what I say thing. We have people who take what is said about Holmes at face value and assume he's a misogynist, but if we look at what he does, we don't see that. And I honestly think Doyle might be disappointed that it has taken us this many years to unpack more of these female characters, because arguably he was more of a feminist than a lot of people who have unpacked his work through the past years.
Absolutely.
Speaking of the many faces of Irene Adler, in the William Gillette play that then was made into the movie, and then, like, later, there was, like, another film adaptation starring John Barrymore that came out, like, in the 1920s. They kind of overwrite Irene Adler with this new character, Alice Faulkner, and turn her into this much more standard ingenue, you know, has to be rescued damsel type. And I just find that interesting that, you know, apparently no one thought to just do a Scandal in Bohemia. Well, no, it's not the woman, it's her sister, because of course that woman died, because, God forbid.
Yes, that's, again, it was partly because Conan Doyle was kind of dismissive of this character. Not Irene Adler, but Sherlock Holmes. I mean, marry him, kill him. This is what he says to William Gillette when Gillette says, I want to make a play, can I, you know, I need a romance interest for, you know, the sake of putting butts in seats. Mm-hmm. He's like, marry him, kill him, do whatever, I don't care.
I feel like it's a little bit analogous to the Robert Downey Jr. films, which I hugely enjoy and love, but it's about taking the Sherlock Holmes mythos and shoehorning it into a popular genre. And again, I don't say that to say that they are not enjoyable to watch or that they don't have value as adaptations, but I think you have to look at them from the lens of what's the goal? And obviously those are not a goal of, you know, Sherlockians necessarily making them to be canon faithful. There's, you know, it's just funny to see that we have kind of through the years, even, you know, thinking about Rathbone with a lot of those, we have different incarnations of adaptations that are for a goal other than fidelity, maybe. It's like, this is a cool character, what can we do with that character, you know? So that was a good point, thank you.
So, did I see a hand? No, oh, okay. The Many Faces of Irene Adler. I guess, I don't know about you, I know my first was Gail Honeycutt. Mm-hmm. She played Irene Adler in the Granada series. And that was, you know, wow, that's an awesome, you know, both in terms of the series generally was faithful to the text, but she got it, right? I mean, I wasn't having to try and figure out, like, you know, mm-hmm. which was cool.
She's such a, just rewatching it to prep for this panel, and she's got this incredible presence. Like, she's so self-contained and, you get that feeling of Irene being completely self-assured at all times, and kind of the interplay of her with Brett's Holmes is so interesting to see him kind of put a little off balance by it. It's interesting to see. Yeah, she's definitely deserves kudos for her classic portrayal.
Yeah, so we've got her. How about, Rachel McAdams, mm-hmm. we have Natalie Dormer, mm-hmm. we have Laura Pulver, we have, for those of us who read, we have Lori R. King. Again, she's there. She's in a negative space. You know, we don't necessarily meet Irene because she is now past mm-hmm. in that version, but she's there. We have, you had mm-hmm. mentioned the name that the author that Lindsay had.
Oh, Carol Nelson Douglas, obviously very famous. Irene series.
Yeah. And of course, your work. So everybody's kind of familiar with these people, the different, yeah, okay, because that's, can we go backwards? Because I think the thing that we were talking, you mm-hmm. the three of us, you, me, Lindsay, mm-hmm. about how Laura Pulver, Natalie Dormer, Rachel McAdams are not really faithful to the character.
I would say they're all taking one aspect of the character, and it's an amplification. It's obviously a choice by scriptwriters to say, I mean, obviously, we don't want to spoil Elementary for anybody, but it's been a while since it aired. Obviously, she's Moriarty, so it's a straight up conflation of these characters. In obviously both BBC Sherlock and the Downey Jr. films, which have very little in common. But one thing they have in common is her connection with Moriarty. So as Lindsay put it, and only Lindsay could, she's his UPS service in the Guy Ritchie films. And she is also obviously consulting with and affiliated with him in some capacity in BBC Sherlock. And Lindsay had expressed, is this what you were wanting to get at?
What Lindsay had expressed
was the frustration of the fact that you're taking arguably the primary trait of her in canon, which is her independence, and you're subverting that for the sake of serializing a story so that she has a connection, rather than having them be two totally separate characters. Arguably, by making her Moriarty, you are giving agency back. I think it's a choice. It might not be my number one favorite one. I do think it's interesting. But in the other two cases, it's like, if you're a big fan of Irene and you're a fan of the kind of feminist aspect of it, to see her back under the thumb of Moriarty, which has absolutely no canonical
basis
foundation.
In canon at all.
I mean, if you want to get that out of canon, you are really stretching.
Yeah, I want whatever it is you were having before you read, because it's not the beer I'm having before I read a story. Ma'am.
Yeah, I always found it disconcerting the way that Irie tends to be portrayed now. And of course, in the novel, she was not a criminal. She was not a bad person.
No, not at all.
But now she's always either a prostitute or just a criminal.
Yeah,
and I always thought it was a bad way to do it.
That's one of my pet peeves about. Yeah. This character and Holmes is, for example, to make him edgy, he's just a drug addict. He is in the stories, but it's a very subtle feature of him, not this overarching thing. Same thing with Irie. Absolutely right.
And that also extends, in case anybody is familiar with the newer Russian series, it's very similar to the Ritchie films in terms of the dynamics, which I really enjoy, and I highly recommend it. It's on YouTube. It's all subtitled with great quality. But they take an Irie who is very much that same kind of subservient almost, which I like the series, but that really jarred with me because I was like, I don't see where there's a foundation for this. And I loved, honestly, in the first Robert Downey Jr. one, I love the chemistry they have. But that was like at the price of losing the sort of independence of the character, which was not, it wasn't enough of a payback for me.
It's the fact that the respect, he doesn't pay attention to other women because it's this independent woman who didn't beat him, even though he says it in canon. I think that's one of the reasons why, you know, for us as the reader, that manifestation, and again, I'm just completely going 180. Yeah, I realize it was throwaway literature, but Holmes, he made the editorial choice in this story to say, this woman did something that Holmes paid attention to. You know, she was memorable, but not because, you know, she's one of the four violets or whatever, and mm-hmm. John's trying to play matchmaker. It's like, you know what, it's... We're back to the Kaiser system, and Holmes is like, nicely played. Right? Because what does he want at the end of the story? He wants the photograph, not the diamond ring, not the bag with all the money in it. He wants this nice little cabinet photo of Irie Adler. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he puts the sovereign on his watch chain. Mm-hmm. And I'm about ready to confuse your Irie and Mary Russell's Irie here, because... who's read the Mary Russell series? Because, okay, we got a couple people. So, the nickel tour of that is an older Holmes meets a young woman named Mary Russell, and they become partners in several senses of this word. They end up, okay, spoiler alert, married. They solve crime together. Or solve problems. I like the way you put that much better. But they talk about Irie in these books. Irie has died, but, and this is something that gets played with all the time in the larger Sherlockian world, they have a son. Mm-hmm. Holmes, during the hiatus, visits Irie for a short period of time in France while he's there, and they have a relationship, and there is a son. And the reveal of that, how she does that, is very good. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, okay, I'm not going to confuse it because, spoiler alert, in your case, Joffrey Norton is an utter bastard. He's mm-hmm. abusive towards Irie, and so Irie is working on becoming... Did you kill him or not?
Yeah, it's okay because he dies on the first page, so that's a spoiler I'll allow. Basically, I use the kind of Watson's take, because I find Watson's intuition to be quite accurate throughout the canon. He can't maybe tell you how he got the deduction the way Holmes can, but if his sort of sense or feeling about someone. And in the story, we hear that, like when Holmes is describing it and we're given the description, He's kind of a flashy type of character, and you can take that as this is just snark, or you can take it as realistic. I took that as, oh, this is a bad sign about this person's character, and kind of ran with that to make it what I wanted to do. And I didn't really want to write him as anything other than deceased, so he's already dead. The book opens and he's on the floor, actually. That's how it opens. So I had an image of him, you know, heart attack on the floor, so that's the opening paragraph.
Right.
And can I say the take on that Lori has, my understanding is of them having met up in the hiatus goes with the I think it might be the Wald Newton family, but it's where all fandoms are connected, and one of the ideas in it is that they are the parents of Nero Wolfe.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
And she doesn't do that exact thing, but I think I've even maybe seen or heard her say that was an inspiration to her, that they meet up during the hiatus, have a son, not Nero Wolfe in this case. And I will say, if you're not a fan of that, Lori has a lot of books, and that's really not something that is like a constant theme. So if you're wanting to let that go, you can skip like one book and the rest of them will kind of be fine.
Not even one book, you can skip part of one book. I mean, and the thing is, even with the playing with the Nero Wolf kind of thing, is the in your case, you've killed Joffrey because, well, he's been another bastard. And what Lori King did was, Joffrey has died. They were happily married. They got, you know, she got her definition of winning up until a car accident. And then later, Holmes reintroduces himself into her life, and then the narrative that Lori King is writing moves on. But you still have independent Irene. You have the Irene that we have read in canon that is not the public face of Moriarty, in one case quite literally, in Elementary. So
sure.
I wanted to bring these two faces, even though they're written, not visual faces of Irene Adler into this discussion, because you'll read them and see that this is, since we don't get Irene's side of the story in canon, right? And everybody, you know, the Facebook effect, we get to see only what you put out on Facebook, but the part of your life that maybe only your friends know, or maybe even only you know, is not inconsistent with canon. And it's not inconsistent with being a whole person, which, again, you know, we have this whole person in the story. So,
I think, it's the question of, does the adaptation serve Irene, or is she serving the adaptation, I think is the question, because a lot of times, obviously, as you said about the sort of mythos and somebody, it's, you know, somebody who's maybe not as familiar. Like, I spoke with Rob Doherty, who is the creator and showrunner of Elementary, a super lovely guy, but what he said was something like, when we need something, we flip through the canon. Well, that's not my personal approach, and that's more of a, we need to include female characters, what can we do with it? My approach, and I think Lori's to generally how she writes any of her characters, is what's this character? Now what's the story that is about them, that it organically comes from who they are as a character? So it's two opposite approaches, and both of them can end up with something that's really interesting. But I think it's a question of, is a character serving a story, or is the story coming organically from an understanding of the character? Thoughts, feelings?
I was going to say, do you have a favorite face of Irene?
You answer, because I know you have a quick answer to this, and I'll keep thinking about it.
This is where I get to fanboy. When I was told, hey, can you do Irene with Amy? I'm like, yes, please make me do that. Please make me do that. Because about 3 years ago at Con, when I met Amy, she's like, hi, I'm an author. So I went and picked up The Detective and the Woman. And
that's the
okay.
first one.
Yeah. And I've been rereading these three books that she's written ever since. Because her Irene is my Irene. That's my face of Irene. I like that a lot. So I get to fanboy and you know, be up here with you on this. So.
Well, thank you. I'm going to say I think I haven't seen it maybe yet. I think it has yet to be, and that it may never be a perfect one. I think a lot of them, there's a continuum of ones that are more awesome and less awesome. I do think that, obviously, Granada, there's a lot of satisfaction in the fidelity of the story and just the dignity that she's giving to Irene. But I think as we kind of evolve and change, even as society and adaptation tones change, I haven't seen the one for today that is the best. It definitely isn't any of the kind of big three of Ritchie films or Elementary or Sherlock. I think they all bring interesting and engaging aspects, but I have yet to see the perfect thing. I will say Carol Nelson Douglas, which I'm less familiar with, does have an Irene who is independent and is not engaged in like a dalliance with Holmes or anything, so there's a nice independent aspect of that. And I know Lindsay was talking about that earlier, but if you're not familiar, I think you can find a spectrum of Irenes that, you know, have make different choices, and that's fun. It's fun that there are different ones, but not, I don't have a number one, I guess. Yes.
Well, what is your take on some of the treatment in the newer versions of the Holmes mythos on female characters, like Mary Watson and Sherlock or some of the other shows?
All right, I'll put it like this. If we're talking about Sherlock, which it sounds like you're kind of asking at least partly about BBC Sherlock, I think Molly is an amazing character. I didn't love every decision, but I love that she's a character who is a relatable human woman who has, you know, strengths and weaknesses. I think that to me, femininity and feminism are about choice, and I like the idea that you can have a spectrum of women who make different choices, and I am tired of and wearied of saying that to be a feminist or a strong character, we have to go all the way over to an extreme. Like, we have to be, you know, like James Bond, whatever. I like the idea that we can have a spectrum of women making more and less traditional choices because they made those choices. It's not the choice that matters as much as the fact that the woman is the one making it. And to go back to Franny Fisher for a second, Franny Fisher is a completely liberated, kind of crazy character who is like flamboyant and very like sexually liberated, but she has an assistant named Dot who is a staunch Catholic and who chooses a very traditional, very moralistic life. And she is an equally feminist character in the context of that world. And in a roundabout way to answer your question, what I want to see in a postmodern feminist world where we're doing adaptations is seeing a Mary Morstan. I like the Mary Morstan in the Ritchie films, who is a strong, engaging, intelligent woman who doesn't have to have something other than what Doyle gives her. It's just clear that she is good with her choices, and that's what I like to see. I don't necessarily love the idea that we have to be James Bond to be a feminist character. I don't know if that answers what you're asking.
Well, I think I understand what you're saying. In other words, what you consider feminism is the woman has the choice of mm-hmm. how feminine she wants to be. But
right.
this sort of media promoted thing where she has to be like Superwoman.
Yes, exactly.
It's an ideal that would be very hard for anyone, male or female.
Right, and that's not just a Sherlock Holmes thing. That's a thing with a lot of portrayals of female characters. And I think often it's a well-intentioned thing to say women can do anything and be anything. Well, great, then that means they can be dialed up to 11 or they can be dialed back to 5 if that's what they personally... You know, maybe they're not wanting to be dialed up to 11 every time. Do you have a...
George Smiley was a perfectly acceptable spy. And he was not jumping out of planes, driving fast cars, doing whatever. I'm going to kind of approach that question sideways a little bit. We were talking about specifically Laura Pulver's Irene Adler, and I made the comment, I think she's really Kitty Winner, if anybody's familiar with The Illustrious Client, right? Because if you look at a lot of the women in canon who show up to get help from Holmes, they are a vehicle to introduce Sherlock Holmes into the story. And basically, that's it. Irene Adler is not that. Kitty Winner is not that. Mm-hmm. Kitty Winner is another very well-formed character that is not used to introduce Sherlock Holmes. In fact, it is a character that is used actually to... I would say solve the problem in the story mm-hmm. in a very unique way. Yeah. But That's kind of the way I'm looking at, you know, show me my adaptation. We've got somebody to introduce Sherlock Holmes into the story. His name is John Watson. Mm-hmm. You don't need to have everything be an entree to Sherlock. We've already got that. So give me the character. Give me something that I can watch, I can read, that is fully formed. You know, as a person, as an antagonist, as a protagonist, as somebody who's, to get back even to your point, our lives are going to intersect for these, you know, 10 minutes, and I'm going to go off because my definition of winning is I'm marrying my honey bun, and I could really give a shit about you, right? So that's what I'd like to see, and that's why, as personally dissatisfying I've found Elementary, I think that the Irene Moriarty duality was really clever, right? Because, okay, yeah, Irene's now in service of Moriarty, but Irene is Moriarty. It's okay.
Right.
In my mind. Versus, you know, the UPS comic.
She's a lesser, I'm very not loving the idea of her as a lesser Moriarty. She's a woman, so she's Moriarty, but less. Like, what, why? Like, no. And I think they would probably argue that's not what they were doing, but then it kind of is, so.
Buddy, want to share their favorite face of Irene? Literary, visual?
I think that the Granada version is my personal high point in terms of depictions of Irene. Like, you know, because it's very faithful to the canon, and also I like the little glimpses they give, the way they expand. Like, we see her in a nightclub with His Majesty back in the day, and they're both dressed as men, and I love the idea that she would do that with them, that they would, you know, do these kind of scandalous expeditions where she would go places where normally a woman, even, you know, with your companion would not be allowed to go.
That's a good point, because obviously we know Irene Adler is no idiot and she's an intelligent woman, and it's like there's a backstory to why she was originally willing to be in a relationship with the king, and to explore that without degrading her or making her look less is really interesting. Yeah.
There's a young adult series called Stoker and Holmes.
Yes.
And the Irene Adler in there is a curator of the museum, and she's mysterious. You don't really know why she's there, what her background is. It's mentioned that she's worked with Holmes on a couple of cases in the past, but she won't discuss them. And you kind of, I'm starting out the series, so I don't know how it's going to end yet, but just, I love her character because she's very, it's steampunk, but she's very regal, and she's very the Irene Adler from the books, just kind of put into this situation. Mm-hmm. And I like the way that she works around stuff. She could almost be her own detective in a way.
That's interesting. I know there are series that have her doing, you know, detective work and things like that. Obviously, that's a common fanfic thing with different characters in Holmes to give them their own detection, and obviously she's a prime candidate. She's a very intelligent person, and I think that's a fun take. I mean, we could also talk about if anybody has, they're like Irene types. Once you get kind of, you know, house to psych, like inspired by things. We have you know, people like Cuddy in House MD that have certain Irene Adler qualities, and if anybody has comments on those or wants to say something, feel free as well, because she's like Holmes to a lesser extent, but still quite a large one. She has influenced subsequent media, and a lot of procedural detective series and things have that Irene character.
There's a series out, and it's not actually Irene Adler, but there's a series out from Canada called depending on where you're at, either Murdoch Mysteries or The Artful Detective.
Yep.
And Julia has a little bit of those. She's very forward-thinking at a time when it wasn't forward-thinking like Irene Adler was. She's a medical doctor, but she kind of goes off and does her own thing, and it's almost like they have a couple of merging of Sherlock characters against Murdoch, who is obviously the Sherlock character in that. And I love the way they play with Julia on that one, too.
Yes, that's a great, I mean, Artful Detective / Murder Mysteries. A lot of Sherlockian connections.
Yes.
There's a lot of fun Easter eggs if you're a Sherlock Holmes fan.
Including meeting Holmes, or Doyle.
Yes.
And Holmes.
And Holmes, yes, famously, yes.
Yes.
I recently watched this series. I don't know if anybody's seen it. It's called Alias Grace. I think it's, I want to say it's a Hulu series.
Netflix.
Or Netflix, yes. And she is an interesting character. And you can't say a lot without spoiling what is happening there. But I would say that the character is a woman who maybe doesn't seem highly intelligent at the beginning, but it's 6 hours and it's almost all her speaking, and it's one of the most gripping things I've seen recently. And you have people like wardens and doctors talking to this woman, and she's kind of playing all of them. And she has a very Irene Adler-like brain, I would say. It's 6 hours of your time. It won't take up your whole life. I actually really recommend it if you haven't seen it. Yes.
I started the series too. Then I had to stop and pick up the book. Book is better.
I have not read it. I would like to, definitely.
It was a very quick read. It's a Margaret Atwood book, Alias Grace.
Yes.
Yes, I can see that.
Obviously amazing, Margaret Atwood. So, yes, please, if you're so inclined. It's like a true crime kind of series.
It is. Don't Google it. Just...
Yes, don't. You'll see a lot of things.
Because it is based on a true...
Yes.
And it adds a lot. That's why I had to stop in the middle of the series and watching it, because I wanted to see... what I could work out to myself.
Yes. Thank you for having seen that. Yay. I'm always telling people to watch it. So obviously, we have an Irene Adler in The Great Mouse Detective. We haven't brought up.
Yeah, Carly would beat all of us for not bringing up yes. The Great Mouse Detective.
I mean, you know, classic canonical adaptation, The Great Mouse Detective. We have this, you know, very lovely Irene Adler character who exists. Yes, hand up.
His first exposure to Sherlock Holmes was the old black and white Basil Rathbone yes. Knight and Bruce versions. But there's some interesting femme fatale style yes. female characters in there. Like, I particularly enjoyed the one in the Spider Woman.
Mm-hmm.
And then the one where the hypnosis woman
yes.
in green. Was, you're nodding your head, so you're familiar with
yes,
those characters.
Yes, I am.
But it seems like your measure of how Irene Adler like is they have to have complete independence. But when you think about it, those female femme fatales in the Rathbone series were all sort of like major players in some criminal activity. But share your thoughts on that.
Well, we're back to your point, is that Irene's not a criminal. Mm-hmm. Right? That's the... She's, I would argue, not a femme fatale.
Right, right.
Because of that. It's just, you know, she's just trying to get on with life.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can talk about the dubious... issue of blackmail or whatever you want to say, but she's not traditionally a criminal, but those are amazing characters. Yep. They are incredibly stylish, and those films are just such a riot. And I think it speaks to the fact that those films, the early on, Holmes adaptations were kind of all about Holmes, and even Watson didn't get, there's like a rise of Watson over the last, 50, 60 years from being yeah. a lesser character to being obviously almost flip-flopping to being an even more important character than Holmes at times. And Ashley, the lovely Dr. Ashley from our podcast, is the literal world expert in adaptations and the shifts in them. But I think the same thing is true of Irene Adler. As we've gotten this mythos kind of, it's become more and more and more of a thing, we've gotten, the world has expanded. It's gone from being just Holmes and then everybody else is kind of whatever, to having a more prominent Watson, and then we get maybe a more crystallized version of Lestrade, we get a more crystallized version of Irene Adler. So I think at that time, we're kind of still in a time when there are a lot of female characters cycling kind of in and out, and some of them are very awesome. That's not at all a criticism. I think everybody should see those if they haven't. They're huge fun. Holmes fighting Nazis, and, you know, they're pastiche for people who are all messed up about Holmes being in a different time. Those put him, you know, fighting Nazis, and it's awesome. So
perhaps the fact that in these earlier incarnations, independent women are portrayed as being criminals because there was such societal disapproval mm-hmm. of independent women. What's mm-hmm. your thoughts on that idea?
Sure.
That's
not a controversial statement at all. Mm-hmm. I think that's something that a lot of people would agree with, that's the, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that circles back to the idea of Doyle as being more progressive than some of the people who came after him. Doyle is saying Holmes is giving his approval of her as a more positive character, And it takes years and years and years to rehabilitate her back to being that positive character, because any woman who's this independent and successful on her own must in some way be a femme fatale, criminal, dark, kind of shady character. So that's an excellent point. Thank you. Yes.
Where would you guys like to see Irene Adler's character move forward in the future? And like future adaptations,
that's
what
a
do you
good.
Think?
That's really good. I was at dinner last night with a friend of mine, and she'd asked me, kind of, you're going to have a female Watson and Holmes, you know, who do you pick? Amy, I'm going to borrow your phrase about, you know, rehabilitation of these characters. Mm-hmm. And the idea that do justice to what she is, right? As a fully formed character that represents something other than a plot device.
Mm-hmm.
Does it need to be, I think a really, okay, yeah, it's clever. It's certainly visually stunning to make Irene Adler a dominatrix. But I'm reminded of something Kevin Kline said, the brave choices in actors to play the same role over and over again and make it interesting. Make her the interesting character without having to use these gimmicks, for lack of a better word. So like, let me have an Irene Adler that is, you know, the CEO or the managing partner of a law firm or something like that, where, you know, that's fine, you know. But again, not exciting, not titillating, not anything, but very much in character, because she's, you know, going her own way and is successful, is self-determinant.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, so.
Yeah, I mean, just similar to what he said, it would be just a character, if we're going to have an adaptation, give it time to breathe so that we can see her life happening, to give her a life outside of this encounter with Holmes. Because that's what I feel when I reread the story, is this is actually, there's an alternate reality where there's an Irene Adler canon and Holmes is bumping into her in it. That's
yeah.
That's what I read, yeah. And that's what I want to see, is an adaptation where it looks like this woman's living her life, headed to the altar with this man, and encounters this very interesting and obviously engaging roadblock, but that she before and after, she continues to have her own life and her own objectives. And she doesn't need to recur. Quite honestly, I love her. She doesn't need to recur. She doesn't need to, I don't need some giant reveal about how she was working for Moriarty all along or anything. I just need her to be who she is. So that would be, I think we're about.
Yeah, Rob, we got the 1 minute, and I just want to say thank you, everybody,
yes,
for
thank you.
Coming and sharing this time with us.
This quotidian world has got you crying, won't you 2 to 1?